Okay.
Okay. Recording.
There you go.
All right. I'll call our Clean Water Commission special meeting for October 6th to order, starting with roll call. Greg Mattis present. Marie? I see you there, but I didn't hear. Marie Lamont? I can see you're saying here, and I can hear it. It shows your audio is on, but I couldn't hear you. There you are. All right. There we can hear you now. Michelle.
I'm here.
Matthew Jones.
I'm here, present.
Sue Marshall.
Here.
Michelle Maynard.
Here.
Josh Seeds. You said he wasn't logged on yet?
No.
Okay. Charlie?
I don't see him either.
No. Okay. All right. And I believe we're not official at this point, but I didn't know if Sandra was with us today.
No.
Here.
She is here, though.
Here, but not official on the attendance list. Well, happy to have you with us again.
Happy to join.
Any public comments, Alex?
No, there wasn't, but let me double check one last time. So I haven't checked since before 5. No, it doesn't look like it.
Okay. And then moving into the body of the agenda. First up, we've got clean water infrastructure mapping and GIS presentation scheduled. Is Henry with us already?
He is, and I'm going to let Jeff, his manager, do the introductions.
Sounds good. Hey, everybody. Good evening. Good to see everybody. Happy to have Henry Shattenkirk here from our infrastructure program within Clean Water. He's one of our senior engineering techs. His primary role at the county is the inventory and mapping of the stormwater system. So for many years, Henry was kind of a solo act doing that job for us. And just about the beginning of the pandemic, we were lucky to get Julie Christian also on board to do similar work that Henry will be talking about today. And Julie is able to join us today as well. So if there are questions and commentary on the world that these two live in, that would be great. I wanted to do a little bit of a lead-in. I think what Henry's going to share with you all is very much the nuts and bolts of kind of what infrastructure mapping and inventory is all about and how it's done at the county. And it's an involved process that takes a lot of effort and a lot of skill that these folks do. And so not something that you always hear about. It's not one of those pieces of our program that is really talked about all the time, but I think it's a neat opportunity to kind of hear about something that's really critical to what we do, even though it's kind of always going on in the background. So there's really two reasons that we approach mapping the storm sewer system and inventorying the storm sewer system. The first is fairly mundane, and that is it is one of our requirements in the stormwater permit. So the municipal stormwater permit has one of its elements of the stormwater management program is mapping of the infrastructure in the county. So for a very simple reason, we do it so that we can comply with the permit. However, much more importantly than that is that having a solid and accurate map of an inventory of all of the assets that we own as a stormwater entity is critical to pretty much everything else we do. So the work that these folks do to take stormwater infrastructure that gets built from a plan set into a database, that drives all of the inspection work that we do in our public facility realm. It drives all of the maintenance work that we do. It's asset by asset. It's all an individual, unique asset that we deal with. So each of those things go in there. It informs much of our source control work that you've heard Bob Patterson talk about in the past, and a lot of things like emergency spill response, just a host of very important uses for this data set once it's in there. So it's pretty cool. A lot of other folks outside the county, I'll also add, rely on these pieces of information. So I know Henry and Julie get a lot of requests from consultant firms, from other agencies, from other departments within our agency who need background on where the swarm system is and what's going on out there. So it's pretty cool stuff. Happy to have the opportunity to get Henry in here to talk about it a little bit tonight, and I will get out of the way.
Okay, well, I hope it's as exciting as Jeff makes it sound, but to start, Alice will be running the slideshow itself. I'll just read through my little narrative that I've put together here. First, a little bit of information about what I map and where I get the information. There are three basic categories of projects that I map. The first is county projects, which include road projects, parks, county properties, and stormwater facilities, both new facilities and retrofits. The example here is a small portion of the recent Northeast 119th Street County Road Project. A very small portion, you'll see in the lower right-hand corner, it's sheet 178 of 232 sheets from the first volume, which is one of three phases. So that was a huge project. Next slide. Commercial projects are this is kind of my name for them. It's commercial, and they are basically retail sites, industrial parks, business parks, office buildings, churches, schools, and apartment complexes. Churches and schools aren't usually thought of as commercial projects, but in my mind, we're talking about anything with a big parking lot and a project that doesn't need to be flatted. So the screenshot here shows a smaller light industrial complex. Next slide. This category is the big one for me, the subdivisions. I think we went one slide too fast. Alice?
Okay. There it is.
Need to go back one slide. There. Third category is subdivisions. Here I'm talking about projects that require a plat recording. Most subdivision short plat and condominium projects are residential, but some are business and industrial examples too. This screenshot here is a standard single family residential subdivision. Next slide. Nearly all the projects I map are taken from some generation of an engineering plan, so here are the three basic levels of reliability for engineering plans to me. Preliminary plan sets are those that are still in review. I try not to use those, but sometimes I'm forced to, especially on old things that have been built years ago. Prelim is all I can find. These preliminary plan sets, once they're reviewed, they turn into a final design or an approved for construction plan set. These are much more reliable, but still not the best. The best are the record drawings, which we usually just call as-builts, although record drawings can be anything that someone in authority has designated as the drawings of record. Okay, next slide. For today's presentation, I am going to walk you through a little bit of the subdivision called Plateau Manor. Shown here is the cover sheet from the record drawing plan set. And you can even see the record drawing stamped on the right-hand lower area of that sheet. Next slide. This is just a timeline of Plateau Manor's project timeline. Started with a pre-app in mid-2018. All the Mile High stuff was done by the middle of 2019. The environmental impacts and the engineering waivers, wetland issues, all that. At about that time, a grading and engineering case were both created with the grading permit approved in December of 2019. A development inspection case, or DIN, was created. The DIN is the blue line. The DIN will follow the project all the way to its conclusion. At the end of May 2020, after 5 preliminary plan reviews, the engineering case concluded with a final approved for construction plan set, which went out to the contractors and development inspector to accompany the construction phase. By December of 2020, the county inspector felt the project was substantially complete and requested preliminary as-builts. And a few weeks later, in January 2021, I received a copy of those plans on disk. And with that, I'm ready to begin mapping the project. Next slide. The preliminary as-builts are typically received as a very large single PDF file, but I need to link each storm feature I create to the sheet or sheets that I found the information on. So I'll need to reprocess this file. Because I'll be storing the results on a GIS division server, I also need to be mindful of their basic file size rules. So my process is I first extract and save each sheet from the combined PDF, turn them into black and white TIFF files, and then convert them back into PDF, and then name each sheet. So sounds onerous, but next slide. This is the result. So what was a 100 megabyte plan set that I received, I have narrowed it down to 15 megabytes, and I have named every sheet. So that helps everybody, including me. Next slide. This is a screenshot of the web app that I use, developed by our GIS folks, GIS division of IT. And in this particular shot, I am uploading the stormwater overview plan of the plan set, but I upload each sheet one at a time. And next slide. This screenshot shows the results as they appear in Maps Online, where most other people will go to find as-builts. The highlighted sheets are those that I will reference for all my stormwater mapping. Next slide. This is a screenshot of my actual workspace in ArcGIS, the software. And zoomed to the location. These aerials were taken, I'm guessing, around late June or early July of 2020. There's plenty of evidence of grading going on there. Construction has also begun. In fact, in the lower left corner of the view there, hopefully you can make out that someone's working on a utility trench, and as it turns out, that trench is for stormwater, so that helps me get started. Next slide. In this screenshot, I have geo-referenced the stormwater plan into GIS space using the boundaries of the subdivision that some other editor in the building added just prior to me doing this. So we're all kind of working together, and we don't step on each other's toes because I can't edit their stuff and they can't edit mine. Next slide. In this view, I've started an editing session. The left panel lists all the various stormwater features that I can choose from to draw lines and points that represent stormwater structures. Here I have selected the storm line from the gravity main list. I could just trace the plan drawing, but often the as-built and the final design are exactly the same drawing, except the as-built version has the length and elevation values scratched out and updated. I prefer to use the listed as-built links when they make sense. I can tell the GIS software exactly how long to draw the line, as you can see here. The as-built length is 223.8 feet, and that's what I punched into the dialog there. You can also see the pipe, well, you might have to just trust me on this, but you can see the pipe to the west was installed 2.4 feet longer than the original design. So those sorts of changes as I build the network can add up to some stuff that's pretty far off, which if I were to just trace the network from the drawing, next time I get updated orthophotography, everyone would know that I just traced. Right. And I could be 5-10 feet off. So I continue to... Oh, next slide, please. So I continue to digitize the new stormwater network until it's completely drawn, which is what you're looking at there. At this point, everything is located with geographic coordinates. It would make a really good visual map, but the information in geographic information system is still missing. Next slide. In this view, I've zoomed into the southwest portion of the project. One basic piece of information needed is the long-term maintenance responsibility of each feature I've mapped. I also have yet to create facility polygons, which are areas that encompass one or more treatment and flow control features. So to figure out who owns what, it's best to find a document with some legal standing, and for me, and with subdivisions, that would be a plat map. So specifically, I need to see what's been dedicated to who as far as the land goes. Next slide. So going back to the timeline, on the bottom half of the timeline, I see that the plat was recorded in March of 2021. So with that little bit of information, I can track it down. Next slide. And this is one of two sheets of the plat map. The first sheet in this case is the map itself. The second sheet will have plat notes and some details. Next slide. So these are the locations that I need to find on the plat map. I need to match them up to the place on the plat map. Next slide. There's two bioretention facilities, and most of the filter inlets appear to be in areas dedicated to Clark County as public right-of-way, which I've circled in the streets where it says public. But there's a filter inlet in Tract A and the pond facility in Tract B, so I need to find out a little more about the ownership of those two tracts. Next slide. So this is from sheet 2 of the plat map, which has many notes, among them the track notes. Although neither note mentions stormwater specifically, both notes are clear that each track will be owned by the homeowners association. The county doesn't maintain facilities installed on private property, so both the filter inlet and the pond will be private facilities. Next slide. Based on that, information. I create facilities with yellow polygons representing county facilities and blue representing private. Next slide. Well, all the features still have empty attribute tables, and it's time for me to... The fun part is drawing, the not-so-fun part is filling in the bazillion attributes that have to go in. Next slide. Basically means I have to find all the information for the attribute tables among, in this case, 32 different sheets. Not all of them have any storm information, so it's a search. Concentrating on one filter cartridge inlet, this image shows portions of two sheets with the information I need to populate the table for that inlet. Sheet 11 on the left lists the as-built grate elevation. Sheet 22 on the right has a table that lists flow rates, the number of cartridges installed, and cartridge size and the media used. Next slide. On the left is the filter cartridge highlighted with its empty table. On the right, you might be able to see that the same inlet table is filled with information from those two plan sheets. Our filter cartridge structure tables are beginning to show their age a bit as cartridge technology has become much more complex and there are new players in the market. For example, in this case, there's no field to enter the cartridge size. And while the media field has drop-down options, context phosphosorb material is not among them. So my workaround is just to enter a brief description in the comment field, which says two phosphosorb 18-inch cartridges. Next slide. So, similar example, only this time with a pipe. In the upper left, sheet 11 shows the pipe and plan view between manholes AA2 and AA3. It's an 18-inch diameter corrugated plastic pipe with an as-built length of 223.8 feet. This is the same pipe we looked at a little earlier. But I need a little more information for the attribute table. So sheet 14 in the lower right shows the same pipe in profile, but with details such as the as-built upstream and downstream invert elevations, which is the elevation at the bottom of the pipe. It also has the as-built slope, which I could have calculated given the invert elevations, but now I don't have to. Next slide. So again, on the left, the pipe with the empty attribute table, and on the right, same pipe with all attributes. Yeah. Well, all the attributes I can find anyway. The comment field in this case, I don't have a comment, so what I like to do is put in a link path just as a breadcrumb, so if anybody ever asks me about that pipe, I can... Well, I can find it anyway, but other people might be able to use it as a clue where to find that information. Next slide. So you're no doubt thinking that it's going to be a long slog to enter attributes in each table for 170 new features that I mapped with this subdivision. And you're right, there are a handful of fields that have default values to save a bit of time, such as the service status field. But if I'm careful, I also have some limited ability to mass populate certain fields. Here I've selected the area drain inlets in a row of future backyards. I know there will be some common values for certain fields, so instead of selecting each inlet and individually adding those values, I select the inlet-outlet header on the left, and add common values to all of them at once. Next slide. Here, the table is filled with built for all 12 area drains, with the common install date, maintenance responsibility, information source, and link path. I do still have to go through each area drain and individually enter the great tough elevation, but now that's just one attribute per inlet that I have to enter instead of five, so it saves a lot of time. Fast forwarding a bit, let's assume I've entered all the available attributes in the tables for all 170 of the newly mapped features. Clean water division activities revolve primarily around stormwater facilities. Shown here is a table with all 18 new stormwater facilities I created for this subdivision. You'll notice that there's a warranty start date at the right for all facilities. The two private facilities have an expiration date that's the same as the start date. However, the expiration date is left empty for the 16 public storm facilities. So, next slide. You may recall that I mentioned the DIN case follows the project to the end. Here, you see the DIN bar turns from a solid blue to one that has a lighter inner color at March of 2021. That indicates the assumed maintenance warranty period, which runs close to 2 years, minimally. During this time, all public improvements, including public stormwater, is maintained by the developer. That's why the facility table has no warranty expiration dates for the new public storm facilities. As long as the expiration date field is left empty, county crews will know they shouldn't be maintaining that storm facility yet. Private facilities are technically not covered by the warranty, so clean water staff can begin inspections anytime after the county issues a notice of completion. At the 22-month mark, once the warranty has started, there are 6-month inspections, 3 of those, and then at the 22-month mark, if everything is in satisfactory condition, the warranty bond can be released anytime after. Or, if there are lingering issues, such as a storm system that is not functioning as designed, the bond can be held until all corrections are made. When the bond is released, the county will consider the project and its DIN case to be final. When I receive the bond release notice, I'll enter the date into the warranty expiration field of the public facilities table, and it will show, and then that facility will start showing up on county stormwater lists for routine inspections and maintenance. Next slide. We're getting close here. To facilitate inspection and maintenance activities, I still have one last step in my mapping. Using one of the bioretention facilities as an example, first I check that the maintenance responsibility for the facility polygon and each of the features matches. So in this case, everything should be public. Not just public, but county public works roads. Next slide. Then I carefully select the features that are realistically inspectable. So for example, I will leave out the imaginary flow lines because those are just there for the connected geometric network. And are obviously not things anybody can trip over or fall into. I leave out the perforated pipe cap because we don't want anybody digging a hole trying to find it. I do include the two curb cuts that allow flow into bioretention cell. I include the cell itself, the riser inlet, and the two pipes that connect to it. And finally, I select the facility polygon that I want all those features to be associated with. And then I hit the link assets button. Next slide. Little box appears. with the facility ID, and each of the assets is listed, in this case, in duplicate. I have a second simplified stormwater layer, which I can turn on, which is why there's two sets of the same number in the list. With that layer, I could see that all of the points and lines I wanted to be associated have turned green, where they were red. Now, when an inspector has to defect this facility, he can zero in on the specific asset or assets within it and send that information to maintenance crews. They too can focus on that specific asset in that particular facility. All that activity along with the date is captured and a record created, and that record is created in the Public Works Maintenance Management System. Next slide. Not everybody at the county has GIS software available to them, but they do have the Maps Online web app. This is how that facility appears in map view on the right and the information pane on the left. The top of the information pane starts off with a subset of the attributes I entered. Under that, there are also forms for inspection staff and links to past inspection and maintenance details. Then under that, there's a list of the assets that I just associated with the facility. And finally, there are hyperlinks to the two sheets of the record drawing set that I got the information from. And with that, Plateau Manor is mapped. Next slide. The end. I'm open for questions.
I have a question.
Sure. I don't know who that was.
This is Sue.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that presentation. I imagine you're really busy with the level of construction that's been going on. And I'm wondering, you know, because this is connected with the permit, and each permit cycle probably gets more stringent in the number of things you have to do, how much of the system, the overall system countywide, is actually mapped? Because I'm sure there's older facilities and...
Well, when I first started doing this in 2004, I would say 70% of everything still wasn't mapped. Slowly that got better. I don't believe there's a lot of old treatment and flow control facilities that are still unmapped. Maybe one or two or three out there still. Let's see.
So close to 100% at this point?
I would say so, although there's different levels of reliability in our plan set. There have been other people that worked on other things, such as ditch work, which isn't best. It's not up to the same level as stuff that I get from as-builds. More guesswork than actual. It was a complete guesswork project, that one was. But yes, I would say for things built in the last 30 years, excluding ditches, it's getting really close to 95% or better.
That's really good. And can you talk a little bit about how other people use this information once it's all mapped?
Well, in-house, just in my cube, I have Subhash. I don't know if you've met him yet, but he uses a lot of it before. So if he's got a project that he needs to do, before he even goes out in the field, he checks to see what's mapped. And often that's enough to, well, if he's just scoping, he may reject a project at that level before he even goes out. The operations folks are the people who probably use it the most, operations and inspection, just to find the things that are out there to maintain. Outside of the county staff, oh, and then there's other county staff, like community development uses it when they're getting, when they're looking to at the sky high view of a new project and just see what's already there. And then outside of county staff, a lot of engineering firms do the same thing. Just a quick look to see what already exists in a location.
And from the perspective of a former consultant, I numerous times used maps online to figure out where the drainage from a project would end up. And if it was important, I even included some of that information in models.
Yeah, it's also helpful for tracing and everything, too, to see where it goes back to.
Yep.
So a question about, it sort of follows on, but it appears that, you know, a lot of the input requires quite, detailed sort of look-see at the plans. When people go back to look at them or out in the field to look at them afterwards, I'd imagine sometimes they see that even the as-builts may not have documented exactly what's there. So then are there, you know, regular cycles where you go through and you update those, and so you have a log of the changes and corrections, or how does that work?
We don't have anything, we don't have a systematic thing going on, but our inspectors often will come back and tell me what they need to have changed, because sometimes the plans are correct, but I misinterpret them, because every engineering group uses a different term for the same thing, sort of thing. So I'm, I try, but sometimes I don't get it quite right. And yes, the as-builts are not always as-built. There are sometimes structures included that were never installed, or the other way around. So yes, anytime anyone from the field comes in and tells me that something isn't there or something is not as shown, so that spill control manhole is actually a flow control manhole or something like that, I can make those changes. The only thing I really keep a log of, and I've not been all that great at it, is when I'm asked to delete something because the whole facility was never installed, or that's gone missing for some reason. We don't have anything automatic in the GIS. I kind of wish we did. Shows a modification date, and that's it. I don't know. It could have been the 27th modification, and I don't know what that modification was 2 years later.
Just wondering.
Hey, Henry, how long did that subdivision take to map?
Well, truthfully, I have a little bit more to go. And I don't know if you could see any of the dates that I had in the attribute table, but I started this in June, so it's been the subdivision that I was going to use for this presentation. So, it should have taken 3 or 4 days at the most. That's with interruptions. With no interruptions, I could have done it in a day and a half, probably.
How often do you not have interruptions? I'm the one that interrupts him a lot of the time, so.
I was just going to ask if that's why Jeff was asking that.
It's a lot better now that I work at home, I will say that. Working in a big open office where anybody can just walk by and start yakking at you, it's not the recipe for high efficiency, but I do miss it, so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any additional questions, but I will say thanks very much, Henry, for doing that, putting that information together.
Yeah, I'd say excellent. Excellent presentation. I understand it so much better now than, you know, we're looking at parts of it before.
Thank you.
There's a lot of, to go into that process. I never realized how many steps. I knew you did a lot, but I didn't know how many steps that you went through in order to get it from step A to final product in Maps Online.
There used to be fewer steps, but just like everything else, it gets more complicated as time goes on.
But more accurate, too, though.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Henry. Yeah, we're very, very fortunate among stormwater permittees with the extent and quality of this database. It really, it is a lot of work going in the front end, but it's just amazingly useful as far as, especially on the inspection and maintenance end of things, but then all these other peripheral uses that other folks have, it really pays itself back with that part. So pretty cool stuff.
Well, I would imagine you can use it to document, you know, the whole system sizes and system improvements that are needed, or, you know, sort of the rationale for them, you know, and the capital improvement plan and so forth. Having a greater level of documentation will help with that.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you guys for sharing that today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before I move on to the next agenda item, I just wanted to check if Julie was just here to bear witness or if there was anything else on this portion. Good to see you again, Julie.
Yeah, good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I was just here just to see Henry's presentation, and I thought it was great. That was really good. I've been working with him for about a year and a half, and I still learn stuff from his presentation, so I'm really enjoying it and enjoy working with Henry and Jeff.
It's a good team.
And Alice.
And yeah, thank you.
Even though I don't see her very much.
I know. I miss it when we don't get to be in the office. Hopefully soon.
Well, Alice, are you ready to do the staff liaison report?
I am. So if Henry and Julie want to stick around and Jeff want to stick around, that's great. If not, thank you so much for participating. I really appreciate it.
I think I'm going to bow out. Good to see all of you. Thanks again, Henry.
Have a good evening.
See ya.
See you guys.
Okay. Just a quick update on the commissioner appointment process. There was a delay in getting Sandra approved. We have submitted the recommendation for her to the county manager again. That office had a little bit different interpretation of our bylaws than what we had how we interpreted or how we intended it to be written. So we can review them in the next meeting or not, and I can just it was very unusual, obviously, to have a Clean Water Commissioner hired as the manager of our division. And I did not get a written resignation from him, and I did not post a opening, although we had intended it to be that the original posting, those people on file would be we would just go off of that list. And the county manager's office interpreted that we would need to post again and that he needed to file a written resignation. So we ended up doing all that. had a very short opening and still recommended Sandra forward. And then we missed the deadline for yesterday's meeting. So I expect it'll be on the October 19th meeting, although I did see Christy Dunbar was just nominated and put on the public health board meeting, advisory board. So it's nice to see that she's still active in the county process. So I apologize, Sandra. You hopefully will be approved in time for the October meeting, or December, November meeting, which should happen because there should be two more meetings from the for the council. But I expect that'll all happen really shortly soon. So I can review it, or it's just one of those things we can review it and maybe fine-tune the bylaws, or just one of those things know for the next time what their, you know, what the process is. So it's up to you. Do you want to review them or just go with the updated process of how it's being viewed now?
Do we want to discuss that right now? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, or you can let me know, but...
I mean, I'm fine doing it now if we want to just take care of that piece of business, if there's no objection.
Sure.
If I may, I'll read these sentences here right at the very end of it, I think, are of this paragraph, which I think are probably the issue. So, in the commission organization, under item B for commissioner appointments, the last two sentences of it are, if a midterm opening occurs, public notice of the vacancy will be issued within 30 days of the resignation. So there's that statement. Then all commission applications will be kept on file for 1 year by the Clean Water Manager and can be considered for any commissioner openings that become available. So I guess the part that's left it open for interpretation is whether or not that last sentence says you can use those applications that you have on hand and appoint without needing to put the notice out, or if you're still required to put the notice out and you can pick from the ones that you have on hand.
And technically, if it didn't say there that we would post immediately, then we wouldn't have to post. But I think we should. But so, I think the trigger was.
So we could go either way. We could either clarify that we're required to post either way, or we could clarify that if we have an applicant that's willing to, that we still have on file, we don't have to post.
Correct. So it's up to you guys. We can look at it and talk about it more in November. Cause I know there's a lot on the agenda for later, too, but it's just one of those things that came up. That's unfortunately what happened about delaying the process. But
I mean, I'm personally a fan of trying to make bureaucracy efficient. So if you can add the caption that says, if you have a good applicant and they're willing to come on board, you've already done the process of interviewing them, cutting out the process of taking the time to have to do a notice, put the notice out, go through all of that, to me, errs on the side of being efficient. But I understand, too, the idea of posting might garner applicants worth considering, too. So I'm open to discussion on that either way. I could be swayed.
Well, and it seems that it's late in the year, and that if we did post again, then we could have a pool for early in the next year if people aren't continuing. And just by the way, I mentioned this to Brendan, but I'm not planning to continue. And do I need to write a letter of resignation if I'm just not reapplying?
Yes, according to the bylaws, you needed to let me know by the end of September.
Oops.
But I figured, and we've already, I know, well, you could still apply, and it's just more of a courtesy to know how many positions we would be looking for, and that gets into the 2022 aspect of it. But the 2021 replacement for Justin for the end of his term, which ends in December, that one we did post for a week, and we did not get any buddy beyond the two candidates who had previously been interested and had previously been interviewed. and still was a very difficult choice, and we still picked who we picked and have recommended who we recommended. So, and I know that other person is interested in applying and being on the commission in the future and is just waiting for the process to start up. So the 2021 hopefully will get done and Sandra will be officially approved, appointed and approved before the November meeting. That's why you'll see on the agenda it says to be announced or to be for that one position, because technically it's still open. We have I gave to the PR people on last Friday the 1st the press release. And it was posted as of yesterday, and so it's out there for the 2022 positions. Sue wasn't sure about you, and I was going to reconnect, but even then you could still apply if you didn't want to. Obviously, Justin's position is technically open, and Michelle Maynard has indicated that she is going to step down and not renew for the 2022 or pursue 2022. So it looks like we would be looking for two, potentially three positions. Technically three, but Sandra will most likely, you know, she'll apply just like we have all of our commissioners who are currently sitting. Same process. Everybody applies and we go through the process for selection. It closes noon on Monday the 1st. I am hoping to potentially have whoever our selection committee is, and that's part of working on talking with who wants to be on the selection committee, if we want to keep it small again or what we want to do with that, and have a meeting potentially pick candidates maybe on the 1st and potentially maybe even be able to have interviews on the 2nd or 3rd, that early that week, and get them done and get the process. I'd love to have the process completely finished by November before, because I'm nervous that the council is going to not have the December 21st meeting. So I would really, you know, it always ends up seeming that that second council meeting sometimes gets canceled. So I want to make sure that we are done and we have to pretty much have everything to the council by Thursday, November 18th, if we want to be on the December 7th agenda. So we'll have to, and with holiday through there, we'll have to kind of hustle quickly on that. So my plan is hopefully get reviews, do some selections, and hopefully have interviews first part of November, have a selection, have everything sent off that second, early part of the 3rd week. So that's currently where we're at in the process with the 2022. And it's the same process as before, letter of interest and resume. Right now it's gone out to the official channels that we normally do. And I have asked them to give me, the PR people, who they normally contact, because one of my goals, and it's one of the things we're going to be talking about later today, is making sure that we are adequately representing the entire population in a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens. And we need to diversify a little bit more in that way, I think, more than just geographic and occupation and sex and things like that. So I really would like to try and do more and target some different areas. So I've asked them to get me that information, and then I'm going to work with Eric and some other people to make sure that we get the information out into some of the non-typical areas that are the official channel of the Columbian. You know, make sure we get it in, you know, things along those lines. So that's one of my things that I'm going to be doing this next week or so. So that's kind of the big process. So I guess we'll come back down to the discussion about the bylaws, and then we can go on to the 2022 aspect.
Yeah, real quickly. So for Sue's part, should she just send you a letter of intent? Or she just
she can
reapply when it comes up?
Correct.
Yeah, I'll get you something
perfect
at the end of the week.
That'd be awesome.
Okay. My vote on this is to take those last two sentences in that section and trade places. So what it would end up saying is that the notice to direct candidates to submit an application to the Clean Water Division Manager for consideration, that's in the middle of it, and then it would follow to say all commissioned applicants will be kept on file for 1 year by the Clean Water Manager and can be considered for any commission openings that become available. That sentence would be first, so it's clarifying that if you have them on hand as applicants, you can consider them. Then the second part would be if a midterm opening occurs, public notice of that vacancy will be issued within 30 days of resignation. Make that the last sentence, and you can just clarify in there. If, so you're saying you'll take applicants, you'll hold them for a year, add the verbiage, if none of the, no applicants are available to consider, midterm openings, public notice will be posted for 30 days. So that gives us the leeway to, if at any point we have applicants on hand, because we can do these interviews at any point in the process, and it is a process, if we have them on hand and a vacancy happens at any point, we can pull from them without having to go through the public notice.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I support that, like an eligibility list.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Do you want me to send that over in typing at some point, Alice? Just type that out?
Yes, please.
Okay.
And then...
do we need to vote on that here?
I think we should vote. Right. I think you should probably vote on it at the next meeting.
Okay.
That way we can have it in. Everybody can look at it and review it. And then it's also not during a special meeting. It'll be during a regular business meeting.
I'll type that up and email that over. All right. Agenda revamp?
Yes. First, though, who would like to be on the selection committee? Traditionally, we have the Clean Water Manager. And I've had the president and vice, or we can go any other, and myself, or we can have any combination. Or if there's other people who have the bandwidth and somebody else doesn't.
I've done it in the past, I'm happy to, but I'd be totally fine if others want to jump in on this one.
Well, I'd be willing to help out with this one. I haven't had the opportunity actually to do it before, so if that's a help. But I'd also let somebody else who hasn't done it do it.
Marie, I think I could see you making a comment, but I didn't hear the audio.
No, can't hear you at all. Can you chat? Chat box it.
And I will read it out loud. So since it's a public meeting, and then I'll make a copy of it and we'll post it.
Just on
it. She wasn't a second ago. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think there was something with the speaker system though.
How about now?
Okay.
Oh, we had it.
Briefly.
One word.
willing to help.
I saw you type willing to help if needed.
Okay. So Maria is willing to help if needed. I guess, would you like to? We'll be direct.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think this might have been a volume issue.
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Michelle. If someone else wants to jump in, it ought to be, you know, taking someone else's spot, but... You're also polite. My bandwidth is very narrow, so I'm not able to participate. Well, what we could do, if you have a couple different people at different times, you know, Michelle and I can alternate.
I'm hoping to have one meeting to figure out who we want to interview. And one meeting for interviews. And potentially, hopefully, make a decision after interviews. If not, we'll do a deconstruct on a third meeting. But we're on such a short timeline that I want to make sure that we have it narrowed down and have the interview and actually block off time right now. That first week or two of November.
Based out of our attendance here, Matt, do you have any interest either way?
Yeah, I'm certainly willing to help if you need an extra body. You know, it just depends on scheduling, of course. But I'm, for the most part, I'm usually very flexible.
Do you and Michelle mind volunteering to take this one?
I don't mind, yeah.
Okay, probably okay. The sooner we have a general idea of what those dates might be, so we can block them out, the better.
Yes. I am hoping for Monday, November 1st at the evening to go over applications. Hopefully have interviews on the 2nd, before our meeting on the 3rd.
None of those dates will work for me, Alice.
Okay.
That said, with like my high flexibility, but that week is not, that week and the prior week is not really,
okay.
I'm pushing it just to make the meeting.
Okay. Well, and I will figure some stuff out and I will get back to you. I have a list of Michelle Gertz, Marie Lamana, Matt and Brendan as possible, and then we will get a committee after I get some dates, and we can figure out who will work the best for that situation.
Can we have more people involved in reviewing the applications and selecting which people to interview than we do interviewing? You know what I mean?
Yes.
If three of you can lend their time to looking at the applications and narrowing the pool, and then interview with two, if you're available. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yep.
Alice, this is Sandra. However I can help, assuming I'm official at the time, however I can help, just looping in.
Thank you. Although you will be an applicant, so you probably will not get to help much with the process of being on that side of the table, just to keep things clean, but I appreciate the offer. Okay.
So, Alice, for my clarification, for this cycle that you're talking about in November, how many positions are we looking at?
Looks like technically there'll be three. I know Sandra would like to take over and have her position. She would like to renew her position. So we will be looking for two openings.
Right.
It will be for Sue's position and Michelle Maynard's.
Okay. And are we permitted, knowing that those positions are open, will be open, are we allowed to say anything to...
Yes, please.
...people at the network, like, hey,
yes.
There's, if you know anybody who resides in Clark County... Okay.
Yes, please. It's out on public. It got posted, press release yesterday went out, and everything is, it went into the Columbian, and so I'm hoping, actually, Eric is going to be putting something out on our Facebook page and Instagram, and hopefully then we can share it and have that information get out as much as possible. So, yes, please do.
That's how Michelle and I found out. Our neighbor Jeremy was on the commission previously.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, yeah, Michelle may not be on the commission anymore, but I will be at these meetings, which means she and Connor here will be.
We'll have all these new public...
we'll have public presence.
Lots of public presence. Yes. Okay. And so, that... Thank you very much for all of that.
So, yeah, if you're in touch about coordinating times, and then we can just broaden the pool... For reviewing the applications, especially since that can happen remotely
And then, where is, just one second. I am looking for the... Sorry, I have way too many screens open. On way too many screens. Okay. So I'm going to share. It's kind of crazy. All right. Okay. So,
Alice, I'm sorry, can I ask a real quick question? I'm just reading the for the commission on the county's website. It says we are seeking to fill one position. Terms for the positions begin January 22nd and December 2024.
Okay, so I need to have Eric go in and update that.
Because it's going to be technically... three positions, correct? But Sandra...
Okay. It's procedurally three. It's technically two for the public. Correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, I'm clear.
Sandra's on the board. We're just waiting for it to be official.
Right.
Yeah. So the next part was on our... for the, it came up as I was looking at let's see if this goes. Nope, that's not it. I'm sorry, it's not letting me share. But I think I sent the Parks Board. Did I send you guys the Parks Board agenda?
You have forwarded an email
that had it in it.
Capital facility plan.
So Alice, you sent me for the Parks Board, and I assume that's because I'm going to be there next week.
Well, I sent it, I thought, to everybody.
Okay,
now I got it where I can show simultaneously. Okay. There. Okay. So one of the things that I noticed, and I can't see what you guys can see, so hopefully you can see this. But the our agenda is very, very cluttered. And what I noticed that when I was looking at the the Parks Board agenda, it was much cleaner and easier to read. And so I wanted to see if it was something... I really do like having our watersheds, but I don't know if we necessarily need to have the agenda for the next meeting on, you know, the list of items for the next agenda, and a number of the other aspects of it. So I just wanted to run that by you and see if there were things that you liked, because I was honestly looking at redoing our agenda, and I wanted to see if it would, if anybody would be completely offended if I reworked it and did some things similar to what we have on here. I personally don't like the timelines on the minutes. You know, we used to have that, but it never actually ran true to life, so to me it doesn't make sense to have those on there. But doing something a little bit more with the unfinished business, new business, if we want to keep it that way, and having our membership and kind of just cleaning it up and making it not look so cluttered. And I know that we're using one of the official fonts, but whatever font they're using is much cleaner and easier to read. So I just wanted to run it by you guys and make sure that if it was something that was okay to, if you had a problem, if I did that or not.
Yeah, I think to me, at least the point you're talking about, there's no problem with that. I think our agenda is actually pretty straightforward compared to other ones I have seen out there. I agree with you that the watersheds is a nice touch for this body. I also agree with you that the timeline expectations are a little unrealistic, so no need to add that. Whatever changes you want to make with font or taking out the upcoming meetings topics,
okay,
I am not opposed to.
Okay. Anybody?
Also, just now noticing that the Parks Advisory Board has a logo, guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, technically, you do too, but it's just... actually, I think the Parks Advisory Board, that's actually like the parks.
Yeah.
But that's one of the...
I like the watersheds being on there. I'm not sure.
I do too.
But I like the watersheds. I think it's pretty difficult to know what might be happening at the next meeting. So I don't think the topics are necessary. The date, it does help to have, mm-hmm. you know, the date as a reminder. And I'm fine. You know, I'm fine with any font changes. Agree, there's no need to put the timing on it because, as you say, it's hard to keep to that. And, you know, I go with the new business, old business, or unfinished business. Sometimes that's a little hard to do. Sometimes things, there's like a different aspect of something, and you don't know whether it's new business or you're just continuing. So, sometimes it seems like an arbitrary construct. Clean this up, and certainly somebody else looking at it might understand it better. So, go either way. Maurice?
Yes.
You like the... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, now.
We like the watersheds, but we don't really need our term limits there, because that's on the website.
And
you want to declutter.
Yes, and that was one of the things that, you know, I kind of like, but it's also one I was going to look at. But one of the things I also was looking at doing is having it just be watershed denoted in whatever, you know, and have it be the color. So, but have maybe, so it doesn't say Washougal River Watershed, Salmon Creek Watershed, Salmon Creek Watershed. You know, it doesn't list out watershed, you know, which takes up so much room. And that's one of the other things I run into. So, that's one of the things that I was looking at was how
I hear you on that. I will say real quickly on that note though that having done years of watershed education, the key thing we're always trying to get through to the public is that people see the names and stuff and they're like, oh cool, you live on Lackamas Lake, or oh, you live on the Washougal River, and it's like, no, I live in the watershed for that.
Okay.
It's a concept that's lost on a lot of people, and so that's something I kind of like at what we're doing, where you're declaring like, I'm part of this watershed. It creates that like, what watershed am I in?
Okay.
So to the degree that engages with people, if at all,
okay.
I do like that element.
Okay.
Because a watershed is not a body of water, it's the land.
Correct.
We'll be able to kind of make that correlation.
I'm just thinking about how to do both of those things, but we have the header on the, you know, above the members. It says members. We could put in parentheses and put in the same color, watershed.
That's one of the things I was looking at. But, I'll figure out a way to keep, that was one of the things I do want to keep as watershed. I was just trying to figure out how to make it, I'll come up with some different ideas and bring them by you. And
a little map of just the watershed so people know what we're talking about. Since we don't have a logo.
That might work.
Thank you, Major.
Okay. I will look into it and see what I can come up with. You've given me some really good ideas for this. Thank you.
Put it down there below the where the next meeting notes are.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy to see today that we did have that where the speaker has bumped up.
Yes.
In the agenda. So
yes. That's
courteous.
Thank you. Yes. And then just a reminder on the annual report prep. Winter is coming. So if you could please start gathering all together and sending me, especially those people who are going to be going off of the commission, please gather all of your dates that you had group meetings, or you went to individual training, or you volunteered hours, or send me pictures, and any kind of continuing education things that would go towards this, or if you went to any type of stormwater, clean water, things like that, please let me know and send that information to me so I can start putting that in and prepping to get that ready so that we can move forward, because I know there'll be a number of things that we need to address with us and going forward with it. So, and that's all I've got, really. So,
all right.
I thought I was going to be short and sweet, but so I apologize.
Still a lot taken care of, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I am short, actually, so I guess it does work. Okay.
Thank you, Alice. Mm-hmm. All right, working groups. Michelle, research.
We are in the process of scheduling a meeting. We're going to have one before the end of the month to discuss ideas for our next research topic. In the meantime, I did get a lot of data information from Eric about how they did the PoopSmart County work to see if there was anything we could maybe find in there to see if we could help them, since he didn't have as much success as they had hoped. He did a very thorough job, so I'm not sure if there's necessarily anything in there, but at least we have it if we do need it. So, yeah,
cool.
That's our status.
I'll try to jump in on the email there again to move along the scheduling for us. Thank you for starting that.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that we are still kind of, I don't know where we're at with it, is, Brennan, you had sent out that letter so we could get involved with the other groups. And I don't know if we had received feedback from all the other groups yet regarding that. So I don't know if anybody has any feedback right now that they want to add to it, or if we can start working on that. Either group.
Are we good to go, Alice, on sending that out?
I believe so. I thought it was a really good letter.
Cool. I'm going to put that on the to-do list. Matt for outreach.
Speaking of parks, Maria and I are scheduled to go to the Parks Advisory Board early next week, although I see from reviewing their agenda this evening that our presentation, if you want to call it that, amongst other things, on their business is scheduled for 5 minutes. So I'm not sure.
I told them it would be 20.
I don't know. Well, who knows? But I don't know if I can get it, you know.
Like I said, those things are not accurate at all.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if this is like, testifying before city council where there's the red light at 2 minutes and then that's it, I'm done. So we're scheduled to go talk to the Parks Advisory Board about the Salmon Safe Initiative. For lack of a better term, and just get some feedback.
Oh,
and maybe some support. We will see.
There was a note on here about pet waste as well.
Yeah, that goes back from much earlier in the year. I think that just keeps appearing on the agenda. So, Alice, I think we can probably take that off because Eric has been handling all of that.
Okay.
Handling all the tenements.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to be at the Parks Advisory Board meeting also. I was added to it. I'm gonna do my best to be there.
Great.
You know, related to parks management, I believe it was the city of Portland back when salmon were first listed under the Endangered Species Act that they submitted their parks management plan to be an exception under the 4D rule. So I don't know how the salmon safe relates to that. But it seems to me it's along the same lines, but you manage your parks so you're not having an impact to water quality.
Right, and I believe Portland did seek the Salmon Safe initiative. I want to say, maybe I shouldn't say because I'm not sure, but I thought I was reading that recently, that they actually were one of the first to work with Salmon Safe and help established through, they were sort of the test case, but maybe I might be getting my wires crossed here.
Yeah, well, it was many years ago, so my wires could be a little crossed as well, but I thought it was more of a regulatory thing related to 4D rule, but it could be both, actually.
Yeah, I'm just reading here, it says in 2000, Salmon Safe partnered with the city of Portland with the idea of applying Salmon Safe label to urban restoration efforts and land management practices to help preserve Willamette River and its tributaries.
Just for my own education, are you saying 4D?
Yes.
What is that?
That's, okay, you're going to stretch. I'm not a lawyer. Sorry. After the Endangered Species Act, you can apply for an exception to taking. There's a long list of what is likely to cause a take, that is to harm or kill an endangered species. So if you can apply under the 4D rule for an exception, and then it's all listed in the, it's a federal designation and gets listed in the Federal Register, and that makes you know, so some practices may create some harm, but you've done everything you could to prevent that harm, right. So you're protected from any third-party litigation.
Okay, thank you.
But that was the early days.
Michelle with partnerships.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I think I'm going to be the only one in this group for a while here, but
it's ironic for partnerships.
Yeah. So we haven't done anything. Waiting for Sandra to come on board, talk with her about that, and I think maybe we'll be reconstituting when we get our new members. I mean, I expect that we'll be talking more about whether there's anybody else moving around. But, and I'm sorry, Sue, that we won't be working together on it. Hopefully I'll be able to reach out to you on some of this.
Absolutely. You know, my life has changed this past year because my 94-year-old mom moved in and I'm her primary caregiver. So life's just very different, and I'm not able to do all of the volunteer activities I'd like to. But that's life.
That's life, and you've got the most important thing on your plate right now. So, might call or send an email or something, and you can, when you get to it, that would be fine.
That's
the plan. And Sandra, I look forward to getting to know you. Hopefully, you'll be interested in working on the partnerships group.
Happy to help.
Thank you all. Under commission discussion times, we've got review of the mission, vision, and values through a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens. Alice, I don't know if somebody else put this forward or if you did. Anybody wants to elaborate?
that was left over from last meeting. The commission had asked to be able to spend some time looking at the mission, vision, and values using the information learned from Tanya Settle's presentation.
I see you attached it there, so folks can open that up if anybody hasn't looked at this and given it thought already and wants to take a minute all with it, but let's open the floor to that discussion.
And I can definitely have it go for the next meeting if everybody wants to be more prepared for it. Matt, do you have anything?
Alice, I would, I would propose that this, would take a little bit more conversation among the commission to really think about, if we're going to pursue equity in our language, what the purpose behind that is, just so we're not putting in words that we're actually doing something that we will carry out. So that might take a little bit of thought, both individually, and then we can come back maybe as a group and consider whether we want that in the mission, vision, and values, or whether it should be something that's a separate equity statement, or neither.
And I'd like to say you could also, if you wanted to, have a working group very easily. As if it's not in the bylaws, we can definitely make it in the bylaws that I think there is something in there that says that you can create any kind of work group you want, sub work group, and maybe that's something that you would like to do, is to create a working group that would get this down to a better state to be able to put it forward to the group as a whole.
I think it's a very worthy topic, and it really deserves some thoughtful consideration. And it's a tough topic because in a lot of cases we don't know what we don't know, and so you end up struggling with how to proceed. When I think of like environmental justice and who gets what, where are resources spent, I don't know the answers to any of those things, but I think those are good questions to ask. And I'm not even sure who could tell us how we go about pinpointing if there's inequities. But one thing that comes to mind, I was recently reading an article about heat islands within an urban area, and actually going around and mapping certain areas where there's a significant temperature difference, and largely it's lack of shade, lack of green space, parks, and those are often in neighborhoods of minority populations and low-income populations, because dollars don't get reinvested in those areas. So it just made me think there can be real-world consequences, with temperatures going up and health risks and all of that. So in an environmental arena, I think it's very good for us to consider those kinds of things. And like I say, I don't have the answers, and I'm not even sure where to go to find the answers, but it's a worthy mission to take on.
I like the idea of a working group, but I think that it's best discussed by all of us at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I might suggest a meeting devoted to this, and maybe we have a homework assignment with this handout that came from the presentation last time, and pick out maybe three things that strike each of us, that resonate with each of us, and then each identify those, and then look at where the overlaps are and how we could work those into our mission statement, and in fact into each meeting, and work into each of our working groups. So maybe instead of a separate working group, we after we do the group stuff together, then we think about how can we apply it here.
I agree.
There could be other organizations that are kind of further down the road in thinking about this and developing that lens. I know there's some soil and water conservation districts in Oregon that have been, you know, grappling with this, or maybe there's other organizations that could, you know, just could be models of how they thought about it and what they've done.
I was going to say to your earlier statement, Sue, that I agree with the don't know what you don't know, and taking the time to try to look into that to figure out what are the unseen impacts that are going on, what are the unseen issues that aren't being addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the takeaway I took from the presentation that I think comes to my mind a lot in this conversation, particularly within Clark County, is there's a tendency to think of diversity and equity through a relatively narrow lens. If you remember the graphic of the iceberg, there's some particular areas and categories that quickly come to mind for people, but then those might be issues nationally that you can be aware of in lots of situations but don't apply to your local situation. So sometimes an issue like, let's say, homelessness often gets overlooked in some of those conversations, which is a very big issue in our area. So making sure that we are taking a pretty wide look and digging in deeply to see, well, what really are the issues of that. And another thing that I was hearing, at least from Matt's comment, and I don't want to, you know, and correct me if I'm interpreting this wrong, but not putting language in that is just a gesture. I think a lot of organizations feel very compelled to make a statement, but it's not really anything that you're acting on, and it might not even be relevant to a problem that actually exists. But it's just a feeling of making an affirmation.
Yeah, which is why if we tried to work it into the work groups, once we highlight what some things might be, there's a little bit of an iteration here. The work groups actually collect more information. They're the action angle, but they also try to collect more information. So, you know, this ends up being updated.
Yeah, I know. I looked through the strategic plan and the language, and there's nothing, you know, that there's nothing that stands out to me that makes it exclusive at all. But going on Sue's part, you don't know what you don't know. There's something more to include.
Matt, you do a lot of this kind of work. What kind of suggestions do you have?
Well, I think all the suggestions here are good ones. You know, it depends on your particular organization. Each organization is different, is somewhere different on the continuum of DEI development. So going back to my earlier comment, I think I think a good strategy for us is to take some time as a group to talk about it from a strategy perspective. What do we want to accomplish, but also highlighting what Sue said. Part of that is having some data, whatever data might look like to us, to help inform that strategy of what it is that we're trying to accomplish.
And that's a point I'd be curious to know, Alice, if the county itself is already getting information on that. I mean, I know that this conversation you were able to bring forward because the county had been doing some of this conversation internally already, but beyond just having a DEI presentation and then putting some language in, you know, what type of on the ground research is already happening in the county that's giving us some type of snapshot about the communities that are being underserved or overlooked broadly?
I don't know.
And I say broadly just because of the fact that I know that a lot of organizations and tendencies I've run into, the aspect they're looking at is racial composition, which I understand. But there's a lot of diversity to it that
definitely
I think our community comprises.
And you know, another thing for us to talk about, not necessarily today, likely, but at a future place, is the concept of intersectionality too, where people occupy multiple spaces. So just, you know, as an example, Brendan mentioned that they unsheltered. You might be unsheltered African-American, therefore you have intersectionality with two different groups, you know, just as a very basic example, and we can go much deeper than that. So thinking about it in the sense as it being as complex as it really is, not trying to oversimplify it.
Yeah.
And that takes time.
Well, there's an example that really struck me that, you know, that just happened over in Portland, where they had picked a site for the homeless camp in a floodplain, in a Johnson Creek floodplain, not any floodplain, but the place that floods every year. So, I mean, I don't know that area specifically floods every year, but so one says, you know, relative to water specifically, here's how many other of those kinds of oversights, just because people haven't thought of that.
And you can do, you know, if we're talking specifically about the clean water aspect, you can do just sort of a quick cursory search of, you know, clean water commissions or divisions and diversity, equity, and inclusion, and see what they have. There are some that have taken some dramatic steps, and you'll be able to see that in some of the documents that they have up. Taken at least in the sense of drafting it. I think Brendan brings up a good point of, you know, there's drafting a document and then actually carrying through with it. And I feel the commission here is really wants to carry through with an action. I mean, there's some benefit to demonstrating some allyship, but then also putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak, colloquially. So there's some examples out there that we can draw off of, to see what other clean water divisions are doing. And I think Sue brings up also an excellent point about looking locally at some of the other drainage districts, for example, that are doing some of this work.
I will volunteer to do a little looking around, because I think Johnson Creek Watershed Council and East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District are two that pop to mind. I think it's Pierce County Conservation District. So I'll just see what might be out there and a few things I can think of.
What's interesting, because it looks like the Water Environment Federation actually has a handbook or guidebook. And I'll send you a link to that, Sue, if you're... because that might provide some more.
So there we go, partnerships. We've got something to do.
One of the things that was, I know the council, I believe that they approved it yesterday, was a tracking system for road repairs and having a very systematic approach to that. I don't know what they have for, I don't know if that's going to include clean water or not, but I know that their Public Works is looking at it a very systematic way and systemic way of how to make sure that everybody is treated equally and that they can get all of that details and all that data together. But
so everything's not onto 179th Street development. Sorry.
Well, one thing to think about too is that, and I have no idea if Clark County has done this or is talking about this, but some organizations, government bodies, whether it be at the county or municipal level, are undertaking equity audits to gather that data first, sort of the needs assessment, to see what, if any, inequities exist and how do we tackle those. And so who knows where we are, I don't know, where we are as a county are on that.
I think a lot will be determined after the county charter is voted on in November. Because right,
I got the booklet in the mail tonight. I just flipped through it quickly, and I just happened to notice there was something up there for for DEI division.
There is a significant increase focus on that, including creating a position and division and really bringing that more to the forefront. And I know that a lot of and that is on the county website, so if you want to get better informed or look in your voter guide, I know that they lay all that out. And I think, you know, they were obviously public meetings, and so you can listen. And it's very educational to see where the charter committee got their information and how they came at it, and really look at it and very thoughtfully put everything together and presented it. I haven't seen the final draft, actually, and I don't actually live in Clark County, so I don't have much say one way or the other about it. I'm not advocating one way or the other about it, but I know that there is, you know, the documents out there. I know that it's something that we will have a very clear direction from the voters in November. Hopefully, I assume.
I'm going to have to sign off. I'm glad I stuck around for this conversation. So,
me too.
Thank you all, and I'll work on that, get that letter to you, Alice.
Thank you very much.
Have a good evening, Sue.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
So, Alice, is this something we want to schedule to talk about then at the next meeting in November, or is this maybe a little farther? Maybe next November is just a touch base to plan, or
well, or it can be a standing agenda item.
Right. Okay.
And we can, you know, just easily make it part of a standing agenda. And then making sure I write it down, sorry. And then if there are things underneath that item, then we can delineate out, like, okay, everybody do your homework assignment, read, and come back with three things that, you know, like Michelle was saying, and be able to discuss or look at different aspects if anybody has any ideas of what they would like for that, you know, general ideas, or be more than happy, you know, to hear what you would like to see. We'll just have a standing agenda item of the DEI, and then you tell me at the meeting previous or ahead of time if there's something that, you know, this is something I would like to have discussed. So, and we can put it, you know, however much time we want or do towards it. I can definitely make it. I usually do not schedule any presentations in November and in January, and I can definitely keep things very, very short for everything else, so that we can have more time for discussions and additional. If you want to have extra meetings or whatever, be more than happy to do that. You know, it took us about a year to work on the strategic planning aspects, and so it may take that long to get a good document, at least, and a good action plan for moving forward with this. Is there anything in particular you would like to have for that standing item?
I mean, I feel like what I'm hearing is that the topic has been raised, and we're curious to see where there is room for applying the work that we do to that. We're looking for the thing to apply to still. So I think it's that you're talking about people looking at this and thinking about it, coming back with feedback on that, trying to find input from other resources. I mean, every organization doing what they should has been taking the last year to stop and go, hey, what are we doing on this topic? I think what I could see coming out of this is really just more of an examination of our representation as commissioners of the community broadly. I'll use an example I can think of that's a little less obvious in most diversity conversations, but to me, it is applicable. In many conversations around pollution mitigation and how to act to roll out water usage, there can often be competing interests between the needs of different communities within our own county. And sometimes you'll see those being pursued more from, say, a developed urban perspective or a more agrarian perspective, where the impact is being seen or where the need is being seen. And the debate that kind of circles around that in different communities. And I think that that's always the concept is different competing interests, and particularly if you've got one group that's got a lot more say and a lot more power to push that interest. At this point, I don't know that we have a particular agenda item for the next. I think it's just kind of an ongoing conversation.
Okay.
We are pursuing the act of trying to have two slightly more culturally tastefully named geographical items in our county, so
mm-hmm.
I think that holds a little bit to it.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed, I don't know if you guys caught it in Henry's GIS, the watersheds, you know, it had the China Ditch watershed, and I was just thinking about, would he have to go in and manually change every single one of those? Or if there's a way to do an automatic change?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There are ways to do it automatically.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Seven, through the electronic.
But it's true. I mean, that's just one map. I mean, that's one organization's thing. I mean, these name changes ripple through everything. So name changes are not a minor deal.
Mm-hmm.
They cost quite a bit of money for a lot of organizations. So.
Eric just got all those new signs printed. Well, I don't want to cut the conversation short if anybody's got anything else to say, but I myself am going to try to spend some time with the kid before I have to send her off to bedtime.
No problem.
Pardon?
Eric, he's giving a talk to the Naturescaping on Friday, October 29th at the Camas Library on stream-friendly homes. It's 4 o'clock.
Did you say Eric is giving that? Sorry, I missed your last part there on the audio, Marie. It disappeared again.
I don't hear it either.
My computer.
There you go.
We hear you now.
Because I had to yell.
All right. Well, not seeing anything else, I will adjourn the meeting for the evening. Thank you, as always, Alice, for putting everything together and having that presentation for us today.
You're welcome.
Connor, that's time as well.